And now I am walking down to the water's edge. And there is flowing my own story, my own stories. What has happened to you, friend? I hear you ask me. And I reach my hand into the water. Let me begin again.
Welcome to Sema, a podcast on loss, grief, and healing. My name is C.L. Young, and in this episode, I talk with poet Cedar Brandt. This conversation has been in process for several weeks and through multiple recording sessions. It's been a deeply collaborative experience to work with Cedar on this, and I'm grateful for her intuition and insight as we've moved through it. In it, Cedar and I talk about the death of her first son soon after he was born. We consider the erasure of self brought on by deep grief and parenthood, and the role of place in healing. Cedar is the author of the book of poems, Like Any Other Dream Will Do, and currently lives in Moab, Utah, where she is training as a birth story listener, focusing on birth trauma. As always, please be careful with yourself when taking in any media, including this podcast. And thank you so much for being here.
I've been staying at this little cabin that looks down into the grove where Silver's buried. And it's winter, and so there's just all of this big tangle of branches. It's all deciduous shrubs and aspen and birch and hawthorn and things. And so I've really been like thinking a lot about, or just looking at these forms of trees, of plants, has a sort of way of understanding the kind of diffuse nature of grieving and the way it doesn't stay centralized, it doesn't stay the main like trunk of your experience, and yet it continues to happen, as does my relationship with my first child, even as I'm really busy with my relationship with my living second child and just everyone else. I mean, I guess I have that question is always there, like, how do I tend you? How do I feed you and nourish you and tend you still, you know? It seems like that does take so much space in the initial stages of grief to really feel into it. And, you know, I love the idea of like the dead needs our tears to fill the river and carry them to the other side. And just like that need for really feeling and grieving and weeping, wailing, all those things are really like important, actually, parts of grief. But that idea of like what it takes to tend and to nourish the dead, or what that relationship is, I feel like, you know, yeah, I think, like you're saying, I think it changes, and or it can be things that it isn't initially. I think I've been thinking too, like, just returning to the plants, like, of the intelligence of plants and the ways that they work are really complex and not not like perceptible in our human perceptions, you know, it's all this chemical work going on, and then there's photosynthesis, and I mean there's so much growth. There's sort of root growth growing down towards invisible like things in the earth, and sounds of water, and then there's all the growth we see up above. And I guess I've just been like wondering about grief in that way, like, and just all aspects of death. I mean, I feel like in our culture we have such a black and white sort of view of death, or I mean, I realize every religious tradition has its own approach, but I feel like just as a general sort of cultural sense, it's a very like organ-centric view of death, where it's like the heart stops, or and that's death. That's death, you know. And then what happens after that is the body goes away, and then you grieve, and then you get over it. And I was thinking, and like plant, you know, I mean, similarly, we're very organ-centric when it comes to the idea of intelligence, and just like that intelligence is synapses in the brain. It's very brain-oriented. And so there's, you know, a big debate in the sort of scientific world about the intelligence of plants and whether they can have like quote-unquote intelligence because they don't have a brain, and the way they work is in this totally other, slightly alien way. And yet, as we learn more about plants, we learn that they are communicating with each other and passing resources back and forth, and that there's a whole sort of network of they recognize their siblings, they harbor their children. They have this whole, you know, not to get too anthropocentric with them, but they have these relationships that we don't recognize because it's done in this different way. And so I guess for myself, I've just been thinking about maybe grief and death and communication with, and you know, exchange with the dead. It just all happens in this other way that we're not used to, that isn't, you know, sort of organ-centric, that we're not used to focusing on. So Silver was my first baby, and he was born after a really healthy pregnancy, and I went into labor, and I had a sort of long labor at home, and I transferred to the hospital because he wasn't descending, and then when we got to the hospital, they checked me out and everything looked fine, so they said we could keep laboring there. And so I labored for a while, and then he was descending really slowly, so they used the vacuum to try and help him along, which worked. He kind of kept descending, and then right at the end of my pushing him, his heart rate started to seem a little bit variable. The variability started to go down, and so which is a sign of distress. And so they said, "You really need to push this baby out now." And so I pushed him out, and his heart had stopped right as I was pushing him out, and they took him right away, the NICU team, and took them like 14 minutes to get his heart going again. And then they took him to the NICU, and they kept him alive there. He was able to live just for 11 hours, and then basically they couldn't get his they couldn't stabilize him. He had had too long of too long without oxygen. And when he came out, his cord was had looked like it had been compressed. So they don't exactly know why. his heart stopped, but there was some trauma during his birth at some point that went undetected. So that happened in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I got pregnant with Silver right when we moved there, like as we were moving there, basically. As soon as we got there, I found out I was pregnant, or like within a couple of weeks. So I feel like that place, my whole first year of living in that place, was being pregnant for the first time and then having Silver, make the decision to like, it's really interesting. Actually, as I was sitting down there by Silver's grave this morning, I had this conversation with my family about the fact that my parents, they just revealed to us they don't have a will. And we were kind of like, geez, you guys really need to like, you need to like get right a will. Whoa. What the heck, you know? My sister was like, yeah, we need to like, I guess, have some sense of what we might do with this property. And since Silver's buried here and, you know, like down the road, and it was like, just mentioned that in this kind of way that was like, oh gosh, I want to think about that. But as I was down there, I was thinking about like, selling, you know, what if we had to sell this land? And I was thinking, oh, I would take Silver with me. I'd dig him up and take him with me. And there's like, even that, there's all these sort of like moments that almost feel that you're like, after Silver died and we had his body, and Mark kept being like, okay, the next day it's like time to take him to get cremated. Right. And I was like, I'm just not ready. I'm not ready. And we had him at home for 9 days, right after he died. And we like kept him on his little like ice papoose, we called it. And like, and then took him into the funeral home, and then took him again to Montana for another 10 days. So I was with him for like 19 days. I had his body, and like, that's been an area that I like find myself feeling really hesitant to tell people. But every time I've told anybody who lost a baby, they're always like, no matter what kind of people they are, they're like, why didn't I know I could do that? Like, I wanted my baby. I wanted his body or her body, and wanted to like, tend them. And because of the indigenous population in Mexico, the native people have such a, they have their burial rites and things with the dead. They've been able to maintain those. And so there's not a lot of laws around what has to happen with a body. So I was really grateful to have had Silver there so that we could take him home. Montana's similar. It was legal for us to bury him in the backyard, because there's very open laws around that here as well. I guess I was just thinking about the ways in which, we have these kind of like, well, a few things, just these really received ways of approaching the body, or like what's appropriate or inappropriate. I mean, I feel like, and just that, I remember feeling a very distinct, like, oh, we could either kind of pretend this didn't happen and that culturally would be fine, because a lot of people do that. Or, we could have a big like memorial and say our baby died and treat this baby as a, as a person and not just as a pregnancy, like you were saying, that goes really like quietly. Is a very quiet, private thing often in our culture. And just that those like acts of, having his body and tending his body, having our friends like see his body, even as he, Well, and just that he didn't start to just like, you know, he didn't get rigor mortis, like the sort of we have like, I think such sort of mythology around death that we think they go rigid right away and start decomposing like overnight, or there's, you know, things that people are really afraid of. And maybe because it's my child, or maybe everyone feels like this, you know, about their dead, but like those things don't even. I mean, they didn't happen, but you know, we had him for a long time, and he did like change and become more skeletal and slowly, you know, and was like, to me, it was so important to see that happen and to be able to witness that and really like let in his the fact that he was his body was this small organic thing. As opposed to having it, you know, just disappear from my sight and try and have it sink in that way. Then I just wanted another, I just wanted to be pregnant immediately. I just wanted to be pregnant so badly, because it was kind of like, oh, I had spent all this time being pregnant and then I missed this. It was like this very biological feeling of just like, wait, like reset, like just make me pregnant again. So then when I became pregnant, like 6 months later with Bodhi, it was like the same time of year, and then I was pregnant through the same seasons, and then I gave birth to him just 2 months after Silver's birthday, and I had went to the same hospital, I had the same doctor. There was just so many things that were the same, that were like these kind of repeat experience. And so, as time, you know, like coming home from the hospital, it's like we brought Silver's body home from the hospital and like introduced, you know, introduced Silver's body to Zora, my dog, and then like, you know, like did the same but with a living baby 1 year later, and like the same steps and the same motions. And so as time, you know, past, it was like those two experiences really folded so tight, so closely together, because you know, at the time it seemed kind of normal, and now that my life has changed and we've moved and things have shifted, it seems like really strange and amazing the sort of similarity of the two experiences in the way that they intertwine together, you know. It's really, I mean, it's not hard to remember one over the other, but they're just really, they're really folded so closely together. And then we had Bodhi, and he was alive, and we got to do this whole experience of having a baby who was living and doing all the things we had yearned so deeply to have with Silver, through like his first year. And then we moved, and so I like it became clear that it was time to move. And so like I feel like my entire experience of that place was having these, you know, being pregnant and having these babies. And we can't, you know, it felt really right to come and bury Silver in Montana because it was my childhood land, and if there was like more of a rooted sense here. But so much of my experience of and being with Silver and birthing him and being pregnant with him, all of that was in New Mexico, all of that was in Albuquerque, really. And so, I had just been really struggling with trying to figure out like how I could ever leave that place, you know, with all of that, just the feeling of closeness to him there. I really feel like I did the work I needed to do to bring. So like, I had this sense before we moved that I really needed to like make a pilgrimage to the places that were really potent for me, that were really important, like the funeral home that we took his body to, and you know, the like the route to the hospital that we came home from, and like some of the things that like still had a lot of like the kind of traumatic grief around them still. And so So I took Bodhi like he was sleeping in a stroller, and I walked and sort of did this long walking pilgrimage to these places that were near my house. And I felt I feel like I was like kind of calling. And the night before we left, I like circled the house, sort of saying, you know, okay, all these bits of myself and all these like any parts of Silver, like you need to come. We're going as a family. We're leaving this place, and like don't stay here, you know. Come anything that needs to come. And so I've been having a lot of like little flashes of like memories of Albuquerque, but they're interestingly totally devoid of nostalgia. And like it's like I love that place still, but they're not like heavy with nostalgia. And I feel like and in some ways that's how I feel here. I mean, I just went before this call, I went down and sat in Silver's Grove by his grave and thought about his little body buried there. And it feels very like organic and very, I'm glad that his body is there in this like in this earth here. But I don't really feel like closer to him there than I do anywhere else. And I feel like I think this ties back into what I was talking about with the sort of idea of like nourishment of the dead, and like that I'm his mother, I'm Silver's mother, and like what's important is that I am mothering him. Like he's not, I haven't left him in any of these places that that he lived or his body lives or dwells. I feel like, and I feel like the, you know, the there's something so interconnected about Bodhi and Silver and their knowing of each other and their understanding of each other. So my mothering of Bodhi, I think, is very nourishing to Silver.
Was that a feeling that was immediate for you? Like when Bodhi was born, did you ever feel like complication around that?
Yeah, I mean, I felt that. I mean, I think one thing I could sense even before Bodhi was born, like that he really, like Bodhi really knew what had happened and was like coming into the world with a real understanding of like our mental state as his parents and kind of who Silver was and, you know, why the kind of the level of need we had for him and all of those things. But I mean, like when the day he was born, I mean, the day Bodhi was born, I mean, I remember, you know, talking to Mark and like it wasn't the happiest day of our lives. Like in retrospect now, I feel like it was, you know, but I remember having the conversation in the hospital, like, oh, it's its own kind of grief that this can't just be pure joy. Yeah.
Joy.
And, you know, I mean, I think that even though I knew it and I prepared myself, like the, you know, when Bodhi was born, like he wasn't Silver. And I mean, maybe I don't think I've ever said this, but I was immediately like, oh, he's not as cute. Oh, he's just not as cute as Silver. And like, I mean, I think there was just like that. Even though I had thought I was totally prepared and I wanted Bodhi more than anything, I think there was still that just like shock of him not being Silver and like, oh, he really, you know, he's this other baby. And I mean, he is a really different baby, I think. But I didn't ever have feelings of like, oh, like that there was, I mean, I felt like the instinct to like mother and to nurture. I was able to do that with Silver, even though he died. And what that looked like and the, you know, things I had to do with him. I mean, I was like really grieving that he wasn't alive, but I was able to like do some of that work of mothering his spirit.
Culturally, this is such something that doesn't get talked about, and it doesn't get
And I think because people are so afraid to talk about it, or not even just afraid necessarily, but because there's very little precedent in this US mainstream culture in talking about the loss of children, the loss of pregnancy, that the way, I mean, how are people supposed to grieve that if there's no openness about it? And I think watching you, even from the moment it happened, and gathering people around it too, you know, like the ways in which you too and your families have handled this have been just like, to me, a real miraculous gift to the people who've witnessed it too, because I don't know. I get so angry about everything that is stigmatized in this culture around death and dying and grief, and just what you were saying, like the black and whiteness of it and the whiteness of it too. Also, but you know what I mean? I think it's just like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to make any assumptions about how, like, you're healing or what you feel like now. But I think that there's also just some, the way that you have every single step of this has been so thoughtful and intentional and open. Yeah. And, you know, it's just wild to watch it.
Well, one thing that comes to my mind when you're talking, like, is I feel like something that's so different about losing a baby right at birth or a pregnancy or maybe an infant too, is just that, you know, and I mean, losing somebody who's been in the world for a long time, it's like they have all of these relationships with all these different people. And they have this personality that's known in different ways to different people. And so it's like, I think we have these kind of cultural markers of what it means to like celebrate someone's life and the things they left behind, the sort of impacts of their personality and who they are and memories of them. And, you know, losing a baby is not, you don't have that. It's such a more personal experience. I mean, for me, it was a personal experience of being pregnant and you know, and then I think so much of it is a grief. And this is true for everyone who dies, you know, as a young person, but there's, you know, the grief of like what might have been and the life that might have been lived. And who you thought you were going to be in relation to this other person. You know, and for Mark and I, that was like, you know, just becoming parents because, you know, I think for the period of time after Silver died and before we had Bodhi, it was just like a really strange, we were parents. It felt like we were parents. Our sort of energy and our like orientation was one of parents, and yet we had no child. And so I think like, it's like we felt out of place in all areas, you know. It's like we'd go hang out with other parents. That felt terrible. But even like in our grief group with, you know, other parents who'd lost children, it was like we felt sort of fraudulent to be there because our child like hadn't lived and we didn't have memories of like our living child to share or something like that, you know. So it was like this in-between zone that I think can feel really, well, just can feel really left out of the appropriate grieving avenues in our culture. I was just reflecting on this, like, I, like, feel really foolish, actually, somehow talking about this. So I was just sitting there like, what is that? What is that feeling of like of foolishness?
Like talking about silver.
Yeah, talking about, I mean, it's just like, I mean, I feel like I talked to you, I've talked to you about a lot of like points in this process, and I feel comfortable talking to people who really have seen me grieving because, mm-hmm. And I think like, so I was thinking like, what is it that feel like, what's the feeling of foolishness? I don't know. But I mean, one thing that comes to my mind is just that it's like, just that I inevitably focus on these things that have worked or are working to sort of like make me feel I can keep on living, sure. You know? but it leaves out the whole other side of actually like living with loss and grief and the kind of like, just a really strange, like very like languageless experience of like, of just having to live through and live in such uncertainty, you know, such a place of uncertainty.
Yeah.
That I think grief is, you know, that somehow talking about it, it's like all the things that have like worked or that are really like, oh, that's nice or that's good. You know, it's well, like focusing on the, like the little, the little parts of like the little glimmers. And then like, there's so much of it is the mass of just like living your day to day existence.
If you want to try and talk about that languageless part.
Yeah.
I think that we should try, because I think that like, I've really loved these conversations so far, because I think, I don't know, they've gotten into the hard things too, but I think there has been a lot of focus on like the healing parts, you know, and the like pearls of wisdom that come out of these experiences. And like, all those pearls are like human ways of continuing to be alive, you know?
Yeah. Like, as I was kind of thinking through this on her break, I was like, oh, like, I hope she doesn't have to get off very soon. Like, I was like, oh, wow. Like, I guess I also really want to talk about this. Like, I think I haven't been really talking about, you know, about my relationship to that, to my grief and to silver and in some ways, you know, at all. Like, that's been, we sort of mention it here and there, but it's like I live in a new place. People don't know what I've gone through. Like, they don't know that silver was born and that, but you know, like maybe unless I tell them, and then it's like, oh, thanks for sharing that. Even just telling me that you had another child, you know, and it's like, that just scratches the surface. I mean, it's like that ends up being like most of the experience of putting language to it is just like telling people, you know, that this person died.
Yeah.
You know, but that's not, and then it's like the rest of it is left kind of untalked about. Well, and I think, you know, I mean, I was talking about just having the experiences of having babies so close together and their experiences so close together. And I mean, I think one of the like really disorienting things was like being pregnant and being like, okay, we're going to have a baby. We're going to become parents. We're joined in this world of children that I've like observed from the outside for most of my adult life, you know, like all these other people with children, the playgrounds, all that stuff. We're about to like join that world. And then to have Silver die, it was like, oh no, I guess, you know, we can't join that world. Like we're uninvited into that world. Then this other world opened up of people who've lost children and people who've just lost people. And that was like our club, you know?
Yeah.
And then we had Bodhi, and then it was like, I mean, it really felt like, bam, all of a sudden we were like back in the normal person club, you know, and we weren't going to grief groups. And like, we had, you know, play dates, the people who were like afraid to talk to us after Silver died, we're talking to us again. It was like we were like normal people again, you know? And I think that's been really like really disorienting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been thinking about like, just what that, I think we were talking about that. And when we were kind of talking about the idea of like living your life, being a way of honoring, you know, the dead, and just, I guess like the, I mean, just a more clinical term, which I don't really love, but just the idea of like integrating how we integrate these experiences, these huge transitions of our lives, these really transformative things. And like, I mean, I think that's where like, you know, where ritual, like we were talking about, some kinds of ritual, like creating some ritual space, to integrate our lives with our experiences of loss.
I feel for some reason like I want, and I don't know why exactly, and maybe you will, but I feel like I want to ask you about your body.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or some, yeah, I don't know, like how this, because I guess I, you know, having never been pregnant and not really knowing if I'll ever be pregnant, I think a lot about what it means to have a child come out of you, and like what it means to have part of you walking around in the mm-hmm. world. And I think I just, yeah, I guess I just wonder how, because in its own way, like even having a child who is alive walking around in the world feels like this sort of come out of you and, you know, be alive then, feels like this sort of continuous trauma to me, like yeah. to think about like, mm-hmm. maybe trauma is the wrong word, but just like to think about a, you know, this human in the world, and then to have, to lose that human so quickly. I don't know. I guess I just, if there's anything about the way your body holds that, or how, I don't know if that, any of that makes yeah. sense. I don't want to direct you too much.
Yeah. Maybe ask a little more actually about
body. I guess. Yeah. I guess I'm trying to think about how to get to the experience of, or the part of the experience that is not the healing part, mm-hmm. but that is the like deep well mm-hmm. of being so not healed.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I just think about the body, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, a couple things come to my mind. I mean, one thing is like, I had this experience like, when I was in the hospital, like the morning that Silver, or the afternoon that Silver died, or maybe that night, just like right after he died, and I was still in the hospital, and I mean, like I hadn't totally known that I wanted to have children. I hadn't been like a big drive of mine in my adult life. And then, you know, and then we decided to try and have a baby, but it wasn't like something I've always like felt I was born to do, or exactly all those things. And, but I just remember being in the hospital, just feeling this incredible, like, and having, just, I think because Silver just died, and I'd just gone through this process of growing this baby, which happened so fast. It happened so fast, really. I mean, 9 months is so, happens, goes by so fast in some ways. And just having this feeling of just like, oh, like I can just do this like over and over and over, like as much as many times as it's needed. And like, it was a very, like, it was like this new,
like you could be pregnant.
Yes, like I just had this feeling of like, it was really important for me to give form to this child, even though they didn't stay in their body. And like, I don't know how many times, like, I need to do that, but I can do it like an endless amount of times. And it was a very strange feeling, but it was like a new connection to my body that I'd never had before, you know, of just like, this is, it was just a purpose of my body that I hadn't ever tapped into, and having him die. I mean, I think, you know, having him live, I would have been like, oh, one kid sounds great, you know, but having him die, yeah. It's just like, wow, I don't know what needs form, human form, but like my body is capable of producing the human form that these like that these spirits need, that this baby needed and other babies need. Yeah. And like, I like that, I will do that, you know? I mean, I don't feel like that now, but that was just a really overwhelming like reaction to his death I had. All that sort of like activation of some other purpose happening at his birth. Because to me, like being pregnant, I mean, I really loved being pregnant with him, but I wouldn't say I really felt like, you know, my mother, my sort of great mother, I hadn't tapped into that really until he was born. And so that was like part of the grief, was kind of like, oh, I didn't know I was actually going to have a baby. I didn't know this was going to be my baby. You know, there was something that was abstract about it until I saw his body. And so I think like that, there felt like there was a whole activation of like myself as a mother and my sort of, it's so biological too. It felt so instinctual. So that like initially, you know, it was just really like this just an intense desire to mother him. And I think that that's why being able to bring his body home and wash his body, and even just the tending I did to him, which was like changing the ice packs and that he would lay on and just, you know, swaddle him and gaze at him, like those, like I was able to fulfill that sort of biological need to tend him and to mother him. And then when we buried him and I no longer had that, I no longer had his body to tend, I think it got a lot harder. And it was this kind of abstract thing of like, I was, I think, really disconnected from my body and from just from the world in some ways. I was really trying to like mother him, his spirit. I was trying to like join him in this other world. So I think those months I really like, you know, I was really ready to like, you know, I really had that. I was really ready to die. I was really ready to join, to be, to, it was like, oh, if that's where Silver is, like, how can I mother him while I'm still alive? But I know that's not what I was asked. If that wasn't asked of me, I would have died at that point, that he died, or, you know, but I really felt like what was asked of me was to keep living. And yet I was, you know, mothering this spirit child. I mean, I guess I thought a lot about, I've thought just a lot about the idea of waiting, you know, waiting when you're really in that state of deep grief. It's like, you know, I mean, I remember, you know, Mark, when I was just at that total breaking point, Mark, you know, would just say like, okay, we just need to make it through the next minute, and just like downsizing our expectations of like, what, you know, what, and just that idea of time and of waiting, like waiting through 1 minute, like surviving one through the next minute. And then for what, you know, and that, I just felt like that kept coming up. This is big unknown, like what is like, what, waiting for something, waiting to like pass through this and to the next thing, or, you know, waiting for my body to heal, waiting to become pregnant again.
The experience to go from that place of such depth and then taken to this other place, and in such a drastic way, I think, like, as having a new baby, It just seems like that, like mm-hmm. the whiplash of that feels like wild to me.
Yeah. I think it was, I think it really was a kind of emotional whiplash. And I think like, I was so focused on Bodhi's birth because, you know, because Silver had died during his birth. And I really could not focus on having a baby afterwards like that. I couldn't, I just couldn't mentally do that. Yeah. And so, or emotionally or anything. And so all of my sort of focus and intention and work was on birth, really, on birthing him. And so after he was born and all of a sudden there was, I had this living baby, I think it was really, really wonderful. And to like sort of redo the things that we didn't do with Silver. But when I, but I, you know, it was also, it was like a really disorienting time. And when I see, I don't have that many little video clips or whatever, but I've seen a few little video clips of me and I don't recognize myself like energetically or anything like that. There's this kind of fierceness or sort of like where I just feel like I look at that. I say, I feel like I'm a really stripped down version of myself. Like I was in this kind of, I don't know, this other space of like, of like mother mammal. but in some ways, like, I feel like it took probably a few months to come out of that, to start to integrate the, you know, to having a child, actually having a baby and to feel in my body. And with, I mean, I loved all of the early, I loved that early phase. But I had like a feeling, a real feeling of wanting to go back and do it over again. And I think it was like, I was not in my body in some ways in those, for those first few months. Like it was just in a kind of emotional whiplash, like you said. I had never put it in that term, but it did feel like that, like a, just a real, I mean, it was a real preciousness to it, but I also was just, you know, and I think, I don't think that's just because of grief. Like, I think that is part of the birth process. Like, I think birth is intense and it takes a while to integrate, like, your birth experience and just having a child. I mean, I think that feeling of kind of disorientation and, you know, coming, not coming into your new self for, you know, years actually is normal. But I also think just the other element of, you know, birth is kind of coming, you come close to death no matter what. I mean, not literally necessarily, but sometimes, you know, but you are, I think everyone has a sense of kind of getting awfully close to that threshold.
I guess that's sort of what I was trying to ask a few minutes ago. Like, do you feel like you can feel yourself as you are now? Like, do you have a sense of, because I mean, I think you're right that anybody who has a baby, Bodhi's almost gonna be two in June, right? And I mean, I think even just when things go as well as they possibly could, people feel disconnect from themselves or like feel like they're changing or have changed. And I just wonder like where you feel with that, especially having gone through all of these really drastic iterations of this now and in such a short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a big return journey that happens for everybody who has a baby or who goes through experience of loss. I mean, both things, right? There's a kind of return to life, and I think that can take a while. And when you do return, you're not the person you were before. You know, there's a journey that's gone on, and you have to understand, you know, you get to know yourself in relation to the world and who you are in the world. I can't really tease those two things apart for myself because they were so close together. And I think they both have their kind of journey back. When I got pregnant with Silver, I thought, oh, I'm really glad I just got through like my MFA and that process, because I felt like that was such such a process of like a sort of it's an excavation,
I mean,
and a digestive, like self-digesting and coming, like it was its own kind of journey of like going deeply in somewhere and coming back. And especially since I hadn't been, you know, writing before then, it was like this new, I'd sort of like, it was a, you know, a death of a certain, my sort of career and life in one sense, and, you know, this journey and coming out in this other way. And so I was like, ah, oh, great. This really like was perfect preparation for like now this like falling away of other identities and becoming a mother, and then, you know, what that opens up. And then, but then, and then losing Silver was like, it just, I felt like that did a really deep, deep washing of so many things that felt important to me, or felt like identity, ways I identified who I was or what was important to me or what defined me, like so many of those things. This felt so irrelevant and transparent and, you know, flimsy.
Yeah.
Which I don't think has made it easier. It hasn't made it really necessarily easier, but to now be in this place of not knowing, you know, who I am or what I'm doing here. But I do feel like, but in some ways it has made it easier, because I just am not attached. I'm not as attached to those things that felt important to who I thought I was before, you know? I was remembering just the night that Silver died, I had that dream about that I was swimming down a river, and I swam under the water and went through a portal that was kind of under the river into this like underwater world, in which there was all these creatures and sort of human like people. And they like hooked, I like this big butterfly came and landed on one of my wrists, and this big beetle went and clamped itself on another wrist, and they were like monitoring me. And then the butterfly that was on my one wrist, of its big wings like shriveled and died. And one of the sort of like human kind of water creatures like came up to me and saw the butterfly and said, oh, I can see you've just experienced a huge loss. That was basically the whole dream, but it was like this whole, it was like I went into this other world in which I was like recognized, you know, and it was like so strong, and it was like, I was in the hospital, like having just like, you know, lost my baby. And it was such a comforting dream to have gone to this other place, you know, with these other creatures who kind of like were keeping an eye on what was going on.
I don't know if you ever told me about that dream. That's really beautiful.
This tiny hippopotamus and people with like seaweed hair, and it's really like a magical place.
My only last other little question was around like spirituality and your spiritual life, because I feel like I think of you as having had a pretty strong spiritual life before Silver died, and I just wonder if that's changed, if like your spiritual life has changed at all.
You know, for many years I kind of felt like I would was like my spiritual life was like a little corner of my life, that when I would if I'd go on a retreat or something like that, I would remember, it would sort of slowly be like, oh yeah, right. Oh, this whole world, this is really important to me. And I mean, I think it always influenced the way that I, you know, went about my life, but at the same time, like in a kind of practice way, felt like there had to be, like there was like spiritual practice and then there was the rest of life in some ways, like there was some division, or like a, like the formality of meditation was its own thing. And I have felt through, you know, I certainly felt like, you know, going, losing Silver and just going through that grief was kind of like, there was nothing else. There was no other life, or there wasn't practice. There wasn't spirituality. Like there was only one thing, which was just like taking each next step, you know, and staying alive there. And that was kind of that incorporated that all. I mean, that's all there was. So I do think that it, in some ways, like I was talking about the erasure, the different erasures, I feel like that was one thing that really fell away, was a feeling that like that practice had to look a certain way to be practice, you know, to be spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, and just the things we've been talking about right now, like, you know, opening oneself to intimacy, opening oneself to, you know, doing what feels like the thing that needs to be done. I mean, I guess that fundamentally is always like spiritual practice, but that's felt different to me now, to just to not have it have to take a certain form.
Thank you for listening to Sema. Initiated in 2018 as a reading and workshop series in Boise, Idaho, Sema aspires to nurture deep attention and connection as means for change. To join the mailing list or share your insights, please email sema.readingseries@gmail.com. The song in the background is by Teal Gardner. You can find a link to more of her music in the notes.
Now we are traveling back from the ocean. We're traveling back into this room that we have entered together. We're feeling the orb of warmth around our two bodies, our wounded selves woven in story. Kind of embrace Thank you for your listening ear, friend.